is reaching into their pocket. What is it going to be, Donut John?
Oh, it's a red card. That can only mean one thing. It's time for the Get Off My Pitch podcast. My name is Eric Paisley. With me today is...
Donut John, as aforementioned. Yeah, I knew you'd make fun of the fact that I had a snack with me.
A rare day game today. Again, appreciate John for accommodating me. On today's episode, we are talking about the match against Vancouver, where another 1-1 draw has John and Eric wondering about the playoff picture. Will the boys in gold be in it? We're going to discuss some memes, and I'm going to bring up a Twitch streamer that John loves or hates, depending. And yeah, we're going to talk about the match. So yeah, this one's going to be a spicy one. John, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a slightly overcast today, a little cooler, but you know, it's been a busy weekend. School starts tomorrow, so busy. Yeah.
My parents are coming in this weekend, and then next week we got another college visit before school starts at Harpeth Hall. Junior year. Yeah, big one. All right. John, I attended the game live with my daughter, speaking of Harpeth Hall, and I think you streamed it. What was your reaction? What's your gut reaction to the match?
Man, the first 25 minutes were blistering. Mm-hmm. It was great. I'm a little bummed we didn't get more than one goal out of it, but I mean, Vancouver put up some really good defensive efforts, mm-hmm. but I remember I texted you at the 22nd minute mark. I think it was Tony, not Jamie, who brought up, like, Nashville's going for their sixth corner. I was like, bro, we're averaging one every 3.5 minutes. This is great.
Yeah. No. To Jamie, I had my own commenter in my ear. My daughter was like, it's number. She kept holding it, like, her fingership was like 4, 5.
Yeah. I mean, again, that is one of our best starts to a game. I mean, obviously the Hani hat trick in 15 minutes, like, yes, that's better, but I'm just saying as a team effort, because everyone was on board with this. This was a great team effort. One of the best I've seen.
Right.
After that, you know, as you would expect it, we slowed down a little bit with the pressure. Vancouver pushed back. Mm-hmm. We had to handle a wave from like the 28th, like the 33rd minute, like a strong wave of their pressure, but then things kind of balanced out in the first half and it felt okay. And then we, you know, just kind of faded, which it seems to be the trend this year as opposed to last year. We just seemed to fade down the stretch again. So that was not so pleasant.
My impression of it live was very different than I watched the highlights. Live, it seemed like we were on the front foot a lot longer. But to your point, when I watched the highlights, it definitely seemed like Vancouver was much more in control after the 28th minute, whatever you texted
me. Yeah, around there.
Yeah, I guess it seemed less so live. The atmosphere was great. There was about 28,000 fans there. Interesting, we had an entire family of Vancouver fans behind us. Mom, dad, the kids, everybody was in Vancouver. I was like, that was
were
the
they
first
visiting?
They were from Vancouver, and they were from Vancouver. Very nice folks. Everyone from Canada is always nice, so you know, it's a meme, right?
It's required.
Yeah, I think their government requires it. But they were awesome, and the Vancouver players were. It's interesting to I always get a chance to watch the warm ups, and the Vancouver players very classy. They knew it seems like they knew a lot of our players, so there was some. You know, some friendly banter there at the beginning of the game. So, you know, you don't have that sort of vitriol. And that was one of the things that going into this match, I didn't really have an emotional attachment to it. I don't have any sort of opinion about Vancouver as a club or anything. So it seems like a nice city I'd like to visit. But yeah, my gut reaction to it is like it definitely is a tie that feels like a loss. Mm. We just let that game get away. So that's just my gut reaction. So let's move into the hardest working player. With this one was really tough for me. I actually am gonna give it to Hani because he seemed like the one forward we can consistently rely on to have an aggressive or an attacking or just always being on the ball. And it's a rare occurrence where he's the hardest working player because typically he could be both, right? MVP and hardest working. But in this match, he was definitely trying to right the ship. I feel like when he missed that, he just barely missed that curler from the set piece in that fourth or fifth minute. And I feel like, I don't know if that kind of ate at him or not. I don't know how players' minds work. I don't know Hani personally, but It seemed like that kind of got stuck on that. Just again, my own projection of it, and seemed to just be just gnawing at that. Who was the hardest working player?
Well, I would tend to agree with that. I had thought about giving it to Hani, especially because, like I mentioned to you, on the goal, it was very interesting to see that he had transitioned and got the ball out wide right. Because of all the plays, he goes more left than anything in that, and tends to stay on the side, and CJ tends to put more right. It was a really odd position to see him in, but it worked. It was a beautiful cross and everything. So I think he would be quite deserving of that. I was considering of giving it to Walker because, again, first of all, we did have to stand up defensively. There were some stressful times in there. I don't think, and I didn't rewatch it in the fullest detail, but I don't believe he was, you know, the one covering the guy who scored the goal. I think he was farther ahead, so I don't think he was at fault with that. But again, he started making forays forward again, even before we tied. So even when we were up 1-0, he pushed forward more. He was doing more. He was more proactive. And again, you just heard his name mentioned more as he was more involved, which I think is something you asked me, you know, two podcasts ago, something in the fact of what do we have to do to get Walker more involved in the goal, or should we? And I think the answer is we should. Because, I mean, yes, he's the defensive, you know, reigning defensive player of the year, and rightly so. But we've seen he's a great player. He can handle the ball. We saw what he did in the box in the last 5 minutes trying to get a goal, you know, where he juked the guy and possibly could have gone down and maybe drawn a penalty. I don't know. That was an interesting one. But I think it was good to see him more involved, and he put in a lot of effort pushing forward. So I'm going to give it to him because I kind of didn't want to agree with you on the Hani one because I think that there were a lot of people who had gave great efforts. Obviously, I think Shaq Moore did a great job in his first run out. I don't know that he was necessarily hardest working, but I just want to say he seemed to fit in the side. He played well. He looked good. I also thought CJ put in a lot of effort, even though it didn't seem to be on goal. He seemed to come back deeper to try and connect things, and I'm not sure if that's a new sign of the way we want him to play, and maybe Teal is the true number nine. I don't know. I have some questions around all that.
Yeah, well, I have questions for you.
But I do think he put in a good effort, even though his name really didn't show up on the stat sheet. So
I have several questions for you. First of all, let's stay on Walker for a minute. Do you think that was a penalty when he got pulled down in the box there in the stoppage time at the end?
If he goes down and falls, I think you could make the argument for it. I think if it would come from what I saw, because again, I didn't see so first of all, in the broadcast, there were no replays of that because, you know, the game kept kind of pinging along. So without the replay to watch it live, I think it's one of those, it probably would have been with the call in the field. So in other words, if he calls it a penalty, goes down and gets a penalty call, I think it probably sticks. If he doesn't, I think maybe they VAR it, but I doubt it gets overturned. That's what I saw. It was one of those, it was kind of incidental enough. It was borderline. I didn't see anything definitive to say like, that's a penalty absolutely under review, if that makes sense. So, if he goes down, I think there's at least a consideration. I think it does get VAR'd. But if it's a no call on the field, I'm going to guess it would have probably stayed that way as well. That's my instinct. So, but again, I am not a pro referee.
Yeah. So speaking of, before I move on to the MVP, I was at the Green Hills YMCA early Friday morning, and I saw the referee coming in to work out, the head referee. Yep. So when they warm up, they have the pro shirt on where it's like the pro, whatever that.
Yeah.
That I guess it's a corporation or something. That
pro referees is what it's technically, yeah.
Right. Well, he had that on, and he was walking around with his bag looking for a place to work out. So I actually could have, like, you know, said, hey, man, you know, keep it fair.
But 100, you know, I mean, what? Yeah.
What? I dropped this $100 bill. No. He's probably like,
it's Green Hills.
He's like, I make that in 10 minutes. So let's move on to MVP because I have another question for you. So for me, the MVP was definitely Teal Bunbury. And hey, this is the second week in a row we've mentioned the name Teal Bunbury, right? So
Hold on. I just got to rewind. This isn't a VAR. This is a rewind. I asked you an uncomfortable question last week. How many more goals would Teal score? What did you say? I don't
zero.
Remember.
I said zero, I think, right?
Okay. Sorry. I'm sorry, buddy. I had to bring it up. Continue.
Well, I think it brings up a good question. So for me, it was Teal Bunbury. But yeah, I want to hear yours because I want to talk a little bit more about this. So who was your MVP?
I mean, I would probably give it to Teal as well because I think he put the effort on goal. But again, his hold-up play, like, it really does seem to me it's not just it's not just a lineup shift of we have two strikers. It does seem like in the last two games, there's something to it that Gary has asked Teal to kind of be the primary number nine and CJ and Hani to drop a little deeper mm-hmm. and to try and facilitate and get him open. It's like it is really like they want him to be the finisher or the last man to touch it. And they're there to help, you know, like he's allowed CJ's either been given more reign or been asked to kind of be a little more like Randall and help kind of pass it around at the top of the box to try to do things to get Teal open. And I don't know, at least that's what it looks like. It looks like CJ's playing in a larger area. He's a little more spread out. I haven't sat and compared the heat maps of the games. It's actually something that I kind of want to do to look at that. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like Teal's become more of that point man. Now, granted, this one, it wasn't as much of a ricochet kind of scramble in the box situation like the last one was. But it was. He was a target man in there. So it does – I think there is something to be said about it. It's nice to have two target men because both he and CJ were there. When I know Jamie was talking about, and our set pieces were setting up, he's talking about one of them like, look at this. You know, we got Walker and Dave over here and CJ and now Teal's over – you know, he's mentioning – because we now have more big targets up in the box, which I think is a good thing since we've struggled on set piece stuff. But again, great header by Teal. That was – something I feel like we saw from CJ when he's on form, you know, last year, beginning of this year, like the kind of stuff he knocks down and did. So I thought that was really great by him. But I think he was the key to that effort. And he's, I don't know, maybe his finishing just seems a little more on, you know what I mean, in comparison.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I have several questions. So you texted me sort of the look at this icon where we had Leal, so Ronald Leal, Teal Bunbury, CJ Sapong, and Hani Mukhtar as that four. That I was like, it didn't hit me until you texted me. I'm like, huh, interesting. And I started asking a couple of the other folks around me what they thought about it. I got some feedback. It really worked out. I thought it was there was something there. Are we going to see that again?
I think so, but and so I don't want to get too much into the, you know, what if, because I think we still got to focus on stuff with this game. But I look at this lineup and go, man, and imagine if we had Mweel in there, you know, or Mweel available, Lovitz available, because I loved Washington. He did a great job, but I think Lovitz is going to be better. But I don't know. And Godoy available. I feel like we've got some tinkering to do, and I feel like we're going to possibly go through some growing pains in the next couple games of Gary trying to figure stuff out. And because we play Wednesday and we play again Sunday, so obviously we've got games packed in the schedule, so we're going to have to sub some people. But I think we could tinker and find some stuff. But it does, like, you look at it, you're like, that seems like a lot of offensive firepower compared to just Hani, CJ, and a bunch of people trying to get the ball to them. You know what I mean? So I feel like there's a lot of promise there. Will it be delivered on? You know, how many goals will that produce? Well, I don't know. That's what we'll have to wait and see. But I don't know. It gives me hope that we will be a little more, you know, of an offensive threat than we have been. And it looked like it in the first 25 minutes. But again, you know, game's 90 minutes long.
All right. Well, speaking of offensive threats, we're going to take a quick break. And we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some uncomfortable soccer-related questions. I think I've got a good one for you this week. And, of course, we will tell you who or what needs to get off our pitch. So stay with us. And we are back. All right, John, I've got a pretty good, uncomfortable soccer-related question for you, sir. So in the postgame, Gary mentioned, and this is at least the second time I recall from a postgame he has talked about this, players feeling uncomfortable playing at Geodis Park. Is there a problem for some of these players playing at Geodis? And if so, what could it be?
So I know I read some of the postgame comments. I don't know that I particularly remember that one. So I guess, is there more context to it? Just uncomfortable about the park in general, about the game or the atmosphere?
That's my question. It's like, are the players, do they feel a specific type? And I actually posted a question on Club Country USA, shout out to Tim Sullivan, asking him, because I'm genuinely curious about that comment. That's not the first time I've heard that. Obviously, I heard it once during the opening match. I don't recall exactly.
We understood. You and I talked about that. Like it was a big atmosphere, and it seemed like the team was tense. Like it looked like that. And again, I understood because they knew how much pressure there was to not lose that game. You know.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't get my head around, like, who would I he didn't name any players, obviously, but I just, that wouldn't just, it's starting to bother me. Like that, those kind of comments are starting to kind of weigh on me a little bit. Like, are,
well,
is there some
so
sort
I would
of
say this, if we look at the results at home, we have tied more now at home. We don't lose. We've lost one game at home. We've won two, right? Or only one. And we've tied a lot. So the results might indicate that there's something there, you know what I mean? That maybe there's that pressure not to lose these games. But, I mean, we've seen this. It seems
except
like the
Open Cup,
the
Open Cup,
flowing.
But the Open Cup matches have been magical. It seemed like they fed off the crowd.
Yeah.
So I just don't
and
understand.
Also, you know, but also those are a little more playoff atmosphere because you got to win to progress. So maybe there's something to that. But, yeah, I don't know. That is a very odd comment that there would be a level of discomfort there with having the home fans behind you and having that, you know, like to urge you on to win like we did at the end of the game. Like, I don't know, that doesn't sit well with me, but I also don't know that I can explain it or that I understand it.
I can't, so, I don't understand it. I can't explain it. It's it's almost like an uncomfortable question for me. Like I've been asking myself since I watched the post game. I'm like, I don't know. That bothers, it bothers me. The comment bothers me and the question bothers me. I don't know if you had any insight into it. Here's my guess is that I think being over there on that side with the supporters when they're trying to do set piece kicks, it doesn't seem like we have a lot of good set pieces over there. It seems like on the other side, we have better set pieces where we're all. So I think maybe the noise, like, and let me tell you, like, you and I have been over there. It is loud over there. And when Steven has them whipped into a froth, I mean, I can't imagine being that close to them with all that noise kind of funneled into you. I mean, I can see that, but it seems like, and so I was watching, I don't want to bring this into it, but I was watching the Pokal, the Bundesliga, and, you know, the side that I was watching had an entire wall of just screaming fans right there on the set piece, and they were feeding off of it. I don't know. It might be just psychological.
Well, so I would say this, you know, I know, you think about it, you see it in pro football and in basketball in situations, you know, like when you're on defense, make all the noise, you know, when the other opposing team's doing a threefold, make all the noise, wave the stupid blow up things that bang together that they have at basketball games. You know, when your team's free throw, silence, you know what I mean? Yeah. Quiet, give them peace. There is an element of, you know, you could kind of switch it off to support the team as well. But I feel like if that's what the players desired of, hey, we need more quiet to organize this set piece. I mean, I don't see how Gary or the club or someone couldn't communicate that. You know what I mean? And just be like, hey, guys, you know, like even just waving to the crowd, like chill out for a second.
Steven
so we can do this.
We would
respond to that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they're watching the game.
I know Steven Robinson would do anything to help the club. Like he would.
Exactly. So that's the weird thing is if it was an issue with something we're doing, I feel like that could be communicated and fixed easily. Yeah. Probably shouldn't snap on the mic, but whoops.
No, it's okay.
But yeah, that's the weird thing is if it's that, I can see it.
I'm thinking of the opposite. I'm gonna offer a counter case. I know we're maybe taking too long of the segment, but I'm gonna offer a counter case, which is in baseball, where the pitcher is trying to get that last strikeout and the crowd's on their feet and is just screaming. And it seems like in my experience, some pitchers feed off that and get into it. So I don't know. Again, I don't understand soccer as well as most people, so I don't know. It's an uncomfortable question for me. What about you? What do you got?
So I've got another post-game related one. So I two questions on this. So this is the quote from Gary Smith. If we are above the playoff line at the end of this season, it will be the biggest achievement of this group since I've been here. That's his quote. So two things. One, we'll talk more about the quote in the second question. First one, do you think that's actually accurate or no?
Oh, no, it's not accurate at all. Okay. It's not accurate at all. I mean, making the playoffs the first – whatever he did the first year we were in MLS, that was the biggest accomplishment since he got there.
Okay. So I tend to agree. Okay. Second question. And I've thought of – I tried to think of different ways to feel this to elicit, but I think I want to leave it as open-ended as possible. What are your feelings from that quote? Because I had a few different reactions. I want to know what you thought because I know I sent it to you. What are your feelings about our head coach Gary – saying that?
I don't know.
By the way, they can't see your head shaking on the podcast.
Yeah, so I'm shaking my head.
There's much shaking.
I don't know. I've thought a lot about this question since you posted it. Gary is a very cagey guy, and it seems like it could be one of those coach speak things where he does it in front of the cameras to send a message to the locker room, right? So you kind of do that almost like a Belichick thing where you make an offhanded comment like that, and then it gets in the newspapers. Like, you know, Drake Hill writes about it, and then, you know, Dax McCarty sees it posted on his timeline and just goes freaking ballistic, right? Like, right. Like you send a message to the team via – that was my first thought. But there's part of me that is also is like, I don't know. That sounds – if you're doing that now – That flashes red danger sign, like danger. Like you don't have confidence in the team that's been put together. That's also something that was in my mind. It's like, well, I just don't have confidence. Like it'll be a miracle if I can just salvage this season. Like that doesn't seem like a helpful thing to say as a coach. But I'm not a coach. I'm not Gary, and I don't know the players as well as he does. So I don't know, man. I've gone back and forth on this all morning. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. So my thoughts are, if you were trying to get a message that this season has been difficult, because it has, we look at the extended time Leal's missed, Godoy's missed, including, remember, he had some international duty. Walker's missed some international duty. Ake Loeb was obviously a disappointment, even though he tried. Teal missed an extended period of time. So we've had extenuating circumstances. If he had said, you know, given all the things that have befallen us this year, I think a good outcome would be making the playoffs. That statement is not nearly as inflammatory to me or as cryptic as what he said.
Right.
I would have been okay with that. I might have disagreed. I'd be like, I don't know. I think, you know, getting fifth would that be impressive. I think we should still at bare minimum make the playoffs. So I might have disagreed. But to me, the way he said it, because Gary's a smart man, he could have said just that and said, we've come through adversity. We've done a good job. I think because we have some difficult games. I mean, we got to play Austin twice. You look at the schedule. There's some hard teams. I think making the playoffs would be a good achievement. Okay, I guess that's a little, you know, but the fact that he said it like this, I don't know. I can read into, is he trying to complain about the players he has? Does he feel there's something deficient? Is this a backhanded thing at Mike Jacobs and what we've done with the team? Is it a comment on, who he has? Is it a comment on how they've been playing together that he is? Because you've mentioned there's uncomfortableness about people not playing up to their potential. Is he really just trying to call them out again and say, y'all are slacking and not going enough? Like it just, there's a lot of open-endedness there. And it all seems very negative, which is just very odd to me that Gary's doing that. We've seen him before when he's mad at the officials and he calls things out. That's fine. But to leave it like this just feels bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I don't want to dwell too much on it, but yeah, I think there's more to come on that. Let's see how Wednesday and Saturday or Sunday go, and we'll see then. I do want to move on to our get off the pitch segment because I've got a good one. And John, I've thought a lot about this, and I'm not one to really point out or call out a player. I don't want to make this segment of our podcast a segment where we call out players that play for the Boys in Gold. I'm afraid I got to do it. I got to do it though, John. I got to do it. Mm-hmm. My red card goes to Ethan Zubak's mustache. I cannot describe to you how cheesy this thing has gotten since he's arrived. It has gotten to, and I'm just going to say it, he is now starting to look like Dr. Disrespect. And as Dr. Disrespect says, there's only one doctor. There's only one Dr. Disrespect.
There's only one two-time. That's right.
Someone needs to pull Ethan aside and say something. I feel like it needs to be our podcast. So Ethan Zubak, I know you listen to the podcast. Buddy, that stash, it's out of hand. You're gonna get a strike against you, buddy. Dr. Disrespect's going to come down to Nashville. The two-time is going to come down and teach you something about facial hair. I'm just saying, I was like looking at it during the warm-ups. I'm like, Ethan, buddy. And I was trying to describe, my first impression was it looked like a half-empty bottle of Jovan Musk from the 80s that got its wish and came to life and became a real boy. That was one of the things I thought it looked like. I don't know. I've got more written. I wrote them down. No. Okay.
Gosh.
Anyway. So my get off the pitch to keep things a little bit lighter is Ethan Zubak, your mustache, not you, your mustache needs to get off my pitch. John, what do you got for me, bud?
So just as I would normally leave this to the VAR thing, but I got to mention now, remember the doc is a big man. He's 6'8".
Yeah, 6'8".
Ethan Zubak's only 6 foot tall. That's not going to be a pretty fight. I'm just saying, yeah, my money's on the doc.
That's what I'm saying, John. We need it. We're doing a public service right now. Okay.
Yeah, we're saving Ethan. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Harm. Yeah. 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 Okay. So my get off the pitch is to, I can't qualify it. It is to MLS in general yesterday.
Okay, well, okay.
Okay, let me say, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There were about 10 games, and most of them were boring. There were so many ties yesterday. But let me tell you what, the Minnesota-Portland highlights were fantastic. It was fire. The Miami-Cincinnati game was fire. 90-plus 7-minute goal. But none of them were my teams to get off the pitch. What? Why did I have to watch the boring 1-1 tie? I want to see these 4-4 products. I mean, I wouldn't mind being Philly and drop a 6-0 drubbing on someone as well. But, you know, realistically, that's hard to pull off. No, it's get off this pitch, all these teams scoring all these goals and putting entertaining games in us, you know, watching Gary Ball. So I don't know if that's actually saying Gary Ball, I give my pitch or everyone else, and I'm just jealous. But
seems like it's
get out of here. And also, for once, I'm not going to lie. I put money on Cincy. I thought they were going to win it. I believed in them. And then you go and let in the 90-plus-7 goal. I had it. Specifically, Cincy can get off my pitch for that as well.
Yeah.
Look,
you got a lot of red cards. How many red cards you got in that pocket?
Yeah, I don't know. It's one red card, just blanket red card to all the MLS-ness that happened yesterday. Something. I was frustrated with it all. We tied, you know, felt like a loss.
John, anyway. This is what we get when we put good money on teams from Cincinnati. Okay, this is what happens. This is the result of our choices.
This is a gambling lesson for John. You know, just don't do it.
Yeah, and kids out there, this is a public service announcement to our fans. Kids, if you play video games, a recent study has suggested that kids who play video games are more likely to get into gambling. So, specifically online gambling. So I don't know. Know your limits, kids. Know your limits. All right. Speaking of limits, we're going to take a quick break.
Wow, that was the most dad moment we've had in a while.
Well, it's my nickname, man. I gotta do my job. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about this coming week's doubleheader, kind of, and tell you what we got wrong. So stay with us. We are back. Okay, John, let's wipe this slate clean, start over, and talk about who are we playing next and when.
So Wednesday, August 3rd, we get to play Portland at the very central time, appealing time of 9:30. Oh, yeah, kickoff central time, 9:30 p.m. That's a good one. So we get to play in Portland, John. Though. First visit since this was the first road game we played, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because we opened the Titan Stadium. The second game we played, first one in the West, first road game we played in Portland, you know, after the tornado and all that, and they gave us a great reception. So I know we've, you know, built up a good relationship with the Portland fans and all that. So, but should be an interesting game. Portland's on a hot streak. They have played really well the past month. We have piddled along for the last month.
And they came back.
They just played a 4-4 thriller on Saturday.
And we put up 2 on them, and they came back in our own house and tied. Yep. Yeah, I feel like that was a big – I feel like we may look back on that match and think, that was kind of a turning point. And, I mean, this is kind of a VAR moment for me. I said Seattle – I didn't believe in Portland, and Seattle was going to come back. Looks to me like Seattle's just going to stay whatever they are, and Portland's coming on back. So, shows how much I know again. What other match we got after that?
And then on Saturday at 7 p.m., we get to host Toronto FC, the Michael Bradley family reunion.
Ugh. So I sold my tickets for that game because my parents are in town, and I just don't want to be that close to anyone named Bradley. That's a nice pithy comment. That's sort of a hot take, as the kids say. How could someone share those kinds of takes with us on the internet, the Get Off My Pitch podcast? How could they do that, John?
Well, if they have a Twitter account,
Okay.
Or if not, you should make one. I mean, this is Twitter. Sure. Come on, guys. It's 2022. You can go to @GOMP_pod on Twitter. Find us on there. Make comments. Post.
Yep, yes, please, absolutely. Please do. We'd like the interaction.
We occasionally post some interesting tidbits and some funny memes occasionally.
Yeah, so, and John filters out my super hot takes that probably shouldn't be posted on Twitter.
So yeah, most of those don't make it to Twitter.
Yeah, they don't make it. They don't make it on there. So let's talk I think this Portland match. Here's my take. I think we're going to lose in Portland. I think it's going to be a 2-0 loss. I don't see us doing well in Portland. They're on a hot streak and. We're still trying to get together what exactly this run of form is going to be. So I think Godoy is still, I hear he's coming back, but I just don't see him warming up. I don't know. I don't have a good feeling about Godoy coming back, and we need him back because one of the things I didn't mention is I feel like Dax really struggled in this match and he's been struggling. And I think all these matches he's playing are not helping his old dad legs. And this old dad knows that old dad may not be, you know, as spry as he used to be. What do you think about the scoreline there?
Well, part of me, we just mentioned that we had a 2-2 tie with him. They just, 4-4 against Minnesota. I'm like, yes, bring on the goals. But this is Nashville. It's not going to happen, guys.
No.
So I was thinking, I was like, yeah, 3-2 loss would be good. But no, it's not going to be that. It's going to be 2-1. It's going to be more boring than that. I'm going to go with the 2-1 one loss, but it's going to be... And it's going to be a disappointment where we score a goal earlier. We're tied. We go into the last 5 minutes and they sneak one away because it is their house. They pressure us madly in the last 5 minutes and sneak one in at the death. And we go, dang, again, to me, that's what happens. That's kind of the script because it's an away game. We're going to get a tie. We'll play for the tie, and in that last 10 minutes, they're going to just, be able to get something in there. So that seems to be how it works. So
I'll agree with that. I'll back that scoreline. So let's move on to Toronto. I think Toronto is going to be a 2-0 win. I think we flipped the script. I think we come out against Toronto somewhat angry and somewhat really kind of ticked off about how the last couple matches have gone. I think we get it together and go 2-0 on Toronto. What do you think?
I'm going to go with 3-0 just for funsies.
Yeah. Sure.
But my prediction. You talk about Godoy. Gary said he was going to at least travel. He said last week he was going to travel with the team to the away game. So in theory, he's going to go to Portland. Doesn't mean he's going to be in the lineup. My guess is he's in the lineup in Portland. And when we're in a tie situation or whatever, Gary goes defensive, so we probably don't see him. Mm-hmm. My guess is he does play with the Toronto game. My hope.
I can see that.
I don't know that he'll start. I would like to say he'll start, but I can't guarantee that. But I think Godoy does finally get back on the field in Toronto. Here against Toronto, not in Toronto. Sorry.
I think we have
Shaq's there. We got Mweel back. Lovitz. I think we go back with this Bunbury CJ thing, or maybe just with Bunbury if we're resting CJ. Cause again, we're going to be playing games close together and we just, we just go out there and shellac the newly rebuilt Italian Ferrari renovation thing they've gone through in Toronto.
Okay. All right, let's move on to, before we wrap up, what did we get wrong from last week? I'm looking at our, I'll kick us off here. I know that you have one, but I have, I said that there was no mention of Angelo getting lifted up by Stephen PhD, which you pointed out was actually Newton who picked up Angelo on the broadcast, on the national broadcast. So,
I watched it, because I saw a GIF of it on Twitter, and it looked like it was more of a hug, but initially when I first saw it on TV, it looked like he was trying to lift him. But
yeah, it did.
It was just a very, very generous Newton hug is what that was.
And no offense to Angelo. I love him. He's a good friend. I know him well. Not the easiest guy to lift, I imagine. Just going to put that out there. Yeah. Big guy.
Otherwise, I mentioned, I guess I was talking about last week's game, that Lobo wasn't in the lineup. He was. He just didn't play.
Yeah.
And also in the last podcast, we did some math trying to figure out how long it was since the Charlotte game, which it had only been 11 days from the day we were recording to the day we last played them. So I just – math was hard, and I wasn't doing it on podcast and screwing
one
it
of
up.
Us
so I just,
has a degree from Vanderbilt in mathematics, and one of us doesn't.
Yep, that's true. We'll just leave it at that.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave this podcast at that. John, always a pleasure, my friend, to speak with you. I will talk to you again next Sunday.
Yeah, it'll be a doubleheader discussion. It should be interesting, and I will say this. Gary talked about the next 7 of 9 are at home, so this is the stretch where we find things out. I mean, we found a little bit out this week. I think we're going to know a lot by then, and it could be that turning point you mentioned a few podcasts ago where we've turned the corner and it might not be good.
I hope I'm not right. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong too. Let's hope.
Good night, buddy. See you later.
See ya.